Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions, you know what to do. Text those questions in right now. 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let John go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Well, Jacob Eason, now a member of the Seahawks. How about that?
I know.
What does that mean to you? He's a guy that's, we've all talked about the potential, his measurables, his size, his arm strength. There have been questions about his intensity, or I guess maybe his desire. What do you hear about him?
I mean, it just didn't work out in Indianapolis because he just didn't make much progress. And that's surprising because they've got a great head coach who's great with quarterbacks and Frank Reich. You know, what I look at with Jacob is that, you know, I thought going to Indy last year as a fourth-round pick was perfect because his throwing style is a little different. It's a little, and it was very similar to Phillip Rivers. And so I thought, huh, that'll be good because then he can learn from Phillip and, you know, develop and do things like that. But unfortunately, he didn't develop. And then this year, he was kind of caught cold because, you know, he was running first team once Carson Wentz couldn't practice all training camp. And the next thing you know, he dropped behind other quarterbacks and then finally gets cut on Monday. And so it's like, Tuesday. It's like, wow, how about that? So, you pick up a prospect and, like anything else, I mean, I don't read more into it than that. I mean, certainly he's got more experience than Jake Luton. So it's like you give him a chance to come in here, learn the system a little bit. And if needed, he can help. If not, then he'll get cut and then go on the practice squad.
Well, people are freaking out about, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do with him? I'm like, I don't think he's going to see the field.
But, no, he's not.
Yeah, it's just depth right now. You know, we were looking at Case Keenum.
Case Keenum,
Be the starter in Cleveland, you know, kind of brings up, you know, the good backup quarterbacks. I saw preseason, John, that somebody had Geno Smith as the 26th ranked backup quarterback. It's a little harsh. I wonder if they were making that based on, look, he's never going to see the field because Russ is always healthy. But, you know, as far as, you know, I feel like he is upped, you know, if you have him at 26, okay?
Yeah.
I think he's climbed up quite a few spots based on his performance. And I just go off of, okay, yeah, the fumble, he didn't take care of the ball, Pete says, and then, you know, the interception, his receiver fell down, but 72% completion, I think he's definitely upped his status in the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt. It was interesting because I know that yesterday we were talking about who are the best backup quarterbacks, and so I started to look at some of the ratings that were coming in from different people, and believe it or not, Case Keenum came out number one.
Yeah.
And, of course, that tells me if Case Keenum is the best backup quarterback in the league, there's a lot of bad backups. Now, again, you know, you got Marcus Mariota, who's been injured off and on the last 2 years. You know, he's going to be up there. I don't know where you want to put Huntley, you know, the quarterback at Indy. It's like, he may be up there. But, again, it's certainly you don't want to put Nathan Peterman anywhere near there. He should be 26th if that's going to be the case. But, no, I think the only reason that Geno's 26th is because, you know, whatever in his last couple starts and certainly with the Jets, he probably came off as a Debbie Downer and everybody was down on him and all that stuff. And of course, it's hard to give any kind of good rating to somebody who hadn't played in 5 years. But I think, you know, what you're looking at right now, that as he sorts things out, he'll rise to the top 10.
Yeah. Well, Case Keenum, like you said, he had a year 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It was 11-3, 67%, 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. So, yeah. I mean, I feel like, yeah, he probably deserves that number one status as far as backup.
Yeah, and then Gardner Minshew's got to be in there, too, somewhere in the top 5 or 6.
Yeah. Well, and they had in the list I looked at, obviously it was before the year started, they had Teddy Bridgewater, which I would have probably made him maybe number one. Does he still only have one interception, I think?
But I tell you what, I mean, that game on Thursday night is going to be fascinating with all the injuries for the Cleveland Browns. And Teddy Bridgewater goes in there with a foot quad injury. And what I didn't realize until I started writing.
Wait, what did you say? A foot quad?
Foot/quad.
Oh, I thought it was foot quad.
No.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, please continue.
A foot and a quad. Okay, so what I didn't realize is that he got hit 17 times in the game. I can't remember a quarterback getting hit 17 times. Maybe Joe Burrow did last year, but 17 times last week Teddy Bridgewater was hit. So there's no wonder he's carrying through an injury. And the one thing, of course, with a foot/quad is that he's most likely not going to be able to scramble. So that should be interesting.
Bridgewater threw 3 picks last week?
Yeah.
I was looking at it because the Steelers picked him off, and that was his first interception, but that was the last game that was played before the Steelers. So, yeah, we better update those numbers, Dave. Get that taken care of.
John, I was looking at a tweet from John McClain, who's been covering the Texans out there for quite some time, and he was saying that it looks like there could be a deal between the Texans and the Miami Dolphins for Deshaun Watson maybe as early as this week. What do you think?
Yeah, I think now, because again, it still came down to one thing. Is Houston going to be reasonable? And it now sounds like they might be reasonable, because, here it is. You've got a quarterback who's being paid $10.4 million and not playing and doesn't want to be there. And obviously, you can see that the Dolphins right now at 1-5 and a 5-game losing streak are a solid mess. And so they've got to start the rebuilding process. So you're going to see Chris Greer, the general manager, and maybe Brian Flores fired the coach, because of how bad things are. But you can see that Houston. Houston being Houston, because the Texans are just terrible, is that they let Whitney Mercilus go, who was making over $10 million a year just out of the blue, and then they had signed Andre Roberts, a wide receiver, Pro Bowl caliber return specialist. They cut him yesterday, and so all of a sudden, they both landed quick jobs because Roberts went to the Chargers, Mercilus went to the Green Bay Packers, and now the Texans are 2 players less talented, and certainly now, but that probably cleared a little bit of cap room, even though they took a big cap hit on Mercilus. But to me, it's just like, what are they doing? But of course, that's the Texans.
So I guess the fact that you think there's some validity to this Deshaun Watson to Miami deal, that tells us they're out on Tua. They don't buy that he's the guy.
Well, I mean, again, it depends on the price and what they have to pay for, because if they can't get it for the right price. And remember, one of the crazy parts about that 3-way San Francisco Philadelphia trade is that, here's the Dolphins at 1-5, technically, according to the draft, a 3rd worst team in the NFL this year because of the schedule that they have, which is a little bit lighter than most. And so they're sitting there at 1-5, but they don't have that 3rd pick. It goes to Philadelphia. Now, again, they have an extra pick in the first round, but they have to do something, because again, right now they're in trouble, and I guess you can say they probably are a little down on Tua.
Hey, John, we talked to Mike Triplett from New Orleans, and the more I look at it and look at this team, the Saints are 3-2.
Yeah.
But they've done it without Marcus Davenport, Quan Alexander. I mean, all these guys have been injured at one point, the entire time. Traquan Smith, Will Lutz, Michael Thomas, McCoy, Armstead. I mean, and they're 3-2. And then, Marshawn Lattimore, their corner, he has thumb surgery in week 2. And I guess it wasn't, terribly complex as far as the surgery goes. But, he's out there playing with a cast, knocks down 6 passes. And I guess it ties some NFL record. It was like 15-year record or something like that. I mean, this team's got a lot of grit, man. I mean, you look at as far as losing that many starters and being 3-2, they might be a little bit better than people think.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah, but and of course, I mean, they may get some of these guys back this week, because Omanieta, the defensive tackle, he served his 6-game suspension, so he may be able to be active. I know that Alexander has been designated for a possible return. So that's
Quan Alexander, yeah.
Yeah, Quan Alexander for a possible return. And so, yeah, I mean, they may start getting some guys back. But don't forget, they also lost Trey Hendrickson, a good pass rushing defensive end to Cincy, and he's having a great year with the Bengals. So they lost that. And, they lost Janoris Jenkins, who's the Jackrabbit, and he's in Tennessee right now. So I counted up at the beginning of the year, particularly with Mike Thomas being hurt, they were down 10 starters.
Wow.
10 starters from last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's my point. They got a lot of grit there.
Yeah, they do.
And teams like that, they have a tendency to bond and play a little bit over their heads, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because again, I mean, two offensive linemen hurt, for multiple weeks. You know, Armstead, a real good left tackle, him being hurt for, close to a month. I mean, that takes away a lot. And then, really, when you look at their wide receiving core, you take away Michael Thomas, and three of their top receiver are undrafted guys.
421-3776, 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. That's the text line. If you've got a question for John, you can text it in. This one from the 253, John, can you help us understand why L.J. Collier continues to be a healthy scratch? Is he that bad? Is he in the Seahawks doghouse?
Several reasons. I mean, you've got I can give you three reasons. Kerry Hyder certainly can give you Brian Monet and certainly give you Robert Kendiche. They moved ahead of him. Simple as that.
So it is that he's that bad. They're better than him.
Well, they're ahead of him right now in the playing order. So, and remember, as much as L.J. Collier is a former first-round pick with a second-round grade, I mean, Kendiche was projected to be a top-five pick, and Monet has just kind of settled in very nicely. Hyder was a nice pickup in free agency and has done a pretty good job here. So, that ends up what happens. I mean, you end up, dropping down the list when other guys come in.
But you would think if he had, in their mind, any ability to impact in a positive way, he'd be out there because they're not getting anything from the guys you just listed. I mean, the only guy that's really done anything in the way of really being an effective pass rusher is Darrell Taylor. Could he not, at minimum, be part of the rotation?
Well, I mean, where was L.J. Collier in the pass rush when he was active?
He was not to be seen. He was
right.
He was invisible. And that to me was more about who he is as a player and not, oh, well, Monet is just that much better, but he's just so great, but he's still really good. I don't think he is very good.
Yeah, you can see what's going to probably end up happening. Now, again, the trade deadline's November 2nd, I think it is, and so something has to happen real quick. But I could easily seeing a team that loses some defensive tackles and defensive ends, looking to maybe bring him in and get him in a trade, and actually it's only going to get like a 7th round 2023 pick, maybe 6th round or something like that, because then you unload his guaranteed salary, but you're not going to get much in trade value, but then you then create a roster spot.
Hey, Carlos Dunlap, we were having a little bit of a conversation about him, John.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going back and looking at, as far as his stats go, I looked him up earlier, now I can't remember. But, I mean, one of the things is that he hasn't had a sack yet.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't really impacted a game. And after six games last year, he had six sacks, 14 tackles, 11 quarterback hits. And right now he's got six tackles, two passes knocked down. And then, and I'm going to get to this with Jamal Adams, but people are saying, oh, he got paid. And they're saying that he's shutting it down. He's not playing hard and things like that. That's not what I'm seeing. But, I mean, what do you think that the difference is for Carlos Dunlap this year? Because you have to go back to, 2011 to find a drought. As far as sacks go, I mean, he's on a six-game drought right now. And, if you go back to 2011, I think there was a seven-game period where he didn't have a sack.
Yeah, and I look at it more as the problems in the secondary than it is Carlos Dunlap. Because, particularly, until a Sunday night, they had that problem where it's there was no syncing up between the linebackers, the guys in the secondary, and so all those open spots were spots in the middle of the field were open, and of course quarterbacks could get rid of the ball quicker and not have to be worried about getting a pass rush. And so I think a lot of it has to do with the secondary. Now, if the secondary is going to get better, particularly if Trey Brown's going to be able to do some things and Sidney Jones, I mean, we know that DJ Reed is doing well. If they can pick up and continue to get better in their game, it's going to help out that pass rush.
Yeah, well, by the way, Darrell Taylor, what do we, any update on him? I mean, it sounds like he's going to be good to go.
Sounds like it's a possibility. Now, again, there's no injury report today because it's technically a Tuesday in a regular week.
Yeah.
I know it's Wednesday. But
just based on what you've heard Pete say and everything.
Right now, I think he has a chance to be able to play. I mean, again, because what Pete said, it wasn't a neck injury because everybody thought it was a bad neck injury. Obviously, he went to the hospital, which has got to be scary. But in the end, I think that he does have a chance.
Yeah, that guy really, I think he has... He has a lot of hope, a lot of promise there from him. Hey, John, during the broadcast, they had this graphic. I'm not sure if we've talked about this with you, but I don't know if you saw it or not. But they had the Legion of Boom, and they had, I think it was Sherm, Earl, and Cam, and talk about their, you know, scoring title and everything 4 years in a row. And then the M falls off, and it says the Legion of Boo, and it has a picture of Bobby.
It sounds like a Clayton joke.
Yeah, but Jamal, Bobby, and Quandre Diggs, I got to imagine the guy's pretty upset about that. I mean, that was a pretty – that's as bad or as damning of a – you know, stack. Usually those stats are positive,
and that one was
super negative. I was like, man, that was pretty harsh.
That is, I agree. And that was on the broadcast?
Yeah, it was on the Sunday night broadcast.
Oh my God!
So I'm wondering, you know, those guys are probably like, and I'm sure, like Bob was just saying, I mean, if they didn't see it, I'm sure somebody told them about it. So yeah, I'm just wondering. I don't think I've seen anything that was that harsh, and I'm thinking, well, I'm not sure if they're going to be back on Sunday Night Football, but those three probably not wanting to do an interview with Chris Collinsworth or anything like that.
So you're telling me that they have the Legion of Boo for three Pro Bowl players?
Yeah, but I mean, they had the numbers, you know, and it was 400
Pro Bowl numbers,
450 yards given up, and things like that. So I mean, I just gotta, you know NFL players.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be like a major motivator for those guys, I would think.
I would think so, yeah, because again, it's just nasty. That's bad stuff. I don't like it.
John, I love this headline. This is you'll like this, Dave.
Yeah,
Jared Goff. I'm not worried about feeling some type of way playing the Rams.
I love it. Wait, he stole that from Bumpus.
Yeah, feeling
Bumpus
some type of way.
I feel a certain type of way.
Earl's the first I heard say that.
Earl?
Yep, he said it. I can't remember what he was talking about, but he's saying it makes me feel some type of way. And I'm like, well, what type
what
of way are we talking about?
Yeah.
That is such an Earl Thomas thing to say.
Yeah, but that's what the kids are saying these days, John. Yeah. This makes me feel some type of way. But it's interesting to see Jared Goff go. We heard Sean McVay. I don't know if we talked about it with you, but it sounded like he was a little remorseful in the way things were handled with Goff and the exit. And, you know, he, to his credit, was sort of taking issue with how he handled it. You know, I could have done better. I didn't handle that well, essentially, was what he was saying. But
yeah,
what do you think this is going to be like? I mean, is there, you know, from Goff's, I don't expect them to win, certainly. The Lions are a bad team.
Yeah.
But do you expect some different level of Goff that there's going to be? I don't know. We always talk about, does that mean he wasn't trying harder before, but now he's really going to try? Or what do you expect in this?
Well, I don't expect much good because they're a horrible team. I mean, they're the worst team in football right now. Detroit and Houston and Jacksonville. Maybe add the Jets in there, too. I mean, they're terrible. And there's not a lot of weapons to work with right now. Their offensive line's a mess because of injuries. You know, Goff's not. And again, you know, what you wonder with the knee-biting head coach, does he have the right coordinator? Because there's a lot of comments coming out of Detroit that the system that Goff's in doesn't fit what he does. And then you know what happens if he has a scramble. I mean, he's terrible as far as being able to, you know, be able to sync up and doing something like that. So yeah, you throw all that together, it's like I don't see much hope. And of course, I don't think Sean McVay's, I think, trying to be as politically correct this week as he possibly can, because he knows there's going to be such a light on this game because of the Goff Stafford trade. But I mean, he hated the guy. I mean, he hated Jared Goff at the end, to a point where he didn't even want him to be around. And so, I mean, I'm sure once they made that trade, he was jumping for joy. I'm sure he was in Cabo like he usually goes. And, you know, because I know that Matthew Stafford ended up joining him there. He's probably in Cabo going, yes, we got rid of Goff.
Is that how that went down? Because I saw the same thing, John, by the way. I saw, like, he was, like, glaring at Jared Goff on the sidelines in the Green Bay game.
Yeah.
Like, he just a look of hatred, but... Did he call Matthew Stafford or and say, hey, let's go to Cabo? Or was that, did they just run into each other?
I think Matthew was already down there. Because again, it's not, I don't think that, you know, he paid his way down there because that would be a violation of the salary cap. But I think he was already down there. And so it's like, hey, come on over and let's eat and have fun. But
Sounds like tampering or something going
on. Yeah. The trade, I mean, he didn't come over before the trade. You know, he came over after the trade.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, and so it's like, because again, it's like, you know, Sean will spend, but you remember, I've said this story a couple times, is that in that week 16 game between the Rams and the Seahawks, you know, he had John Wolford out there, and he gets hurt. And, of course, now you have Jared Goff with the thumb injury, and so he had to put Goff in the game, and he went to, I think, Bill O'Connell, the offensive coordinator, and he says, yeah, you call plays for a while. I'm sick of this guy.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Guy goes out there, toughs it out with four fingers, missing a thumb on the throwing hand. Seems a little harsh.
This is the only time I respected the guy.
Yeah, Dave finally turned the corner on him in that game, and McVay wants nothing to do with him.
Nothing to do with him.
So, John, is this, you know, I know mathematically it's not the end of the season if they lose this game, but just this game feels heavy. There's a lot of weight on this game to turn things around. You can't be 2-5. Mm-hmm. You can't be 2-5 going into a game against Jacksonville, and at that point maybe you're not feeling that great about their chances there. They're coming into this one a 5-point underdog at home. What's your level of confidence, and do you feel like this is a kind of a we throw out the must-win cliche, but it really feels like, you guys desperately need this win.
Well, I mean, I feel much better if it was going to be Russell Wilson out there, but he's not going to be out there. So I have to, say there's going to be some concern. There's no doubt there's going to be some concern. Now, the one thing that is in their favor is just like in the AFC, at the moment, each conference only has six teams with winning records. But if you now start to fall a couple games behind New Orleans and some of these 3-2, 3-3 teams and all that stuff, I mean, you're never going to be able to bounce back. So this is a vital game. It's at home. You don't want to lose a home game. I mean, you can see that you got two coaches right now trying their best who are great coaches, Hall of Fame caliber coaches that have done as best they can to try to keep everything together, because Sean Payton's done a remarkable job of keeping things together with what's been going on with them. But, he's been very conservative. I mean, it's now rare you see Jameis Winston throw over 25 passes.
Mm. All right, John, we'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay.
There you go.
Good.
If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, it's a 2-4 football team with questions surrounding a coordinator, but enough about the Seahawks. We'll talk some UW football coming up. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
Have you ever seen Lefko more proud of a tease than that one?
I like this one, man.
I could see him as I'm reading it. I could just see him at the corner of my eye, just a big grin on his face as he's dressed in his alma mater's colors behind the glass there, and his husky purple.
What, Syracuse? You can't adopt this school? Why not?
Lots of people do that here.
My West Coast team.
He's assimilating out here. Yeah.
So, read the Chiefs again.
It's a 2-4 football team with questions surrounding a coordinator. But enough about the Seahawks. We'll talk about the UW football team.
Hey-o!
I was just waiting until the recognition set in. So then when he got to the part, I liked it.
Yeah, so he's still happy. But he's right. I mean, it's UW football. They lost to UCLA, which I don't think surprised anybody. We talk about expectations and changing your expectations for the Seahawks based on what, evidence being presented. You change your expectations. I didn't get the sense that there was a lot of expectation attached to the Husky team going in. I think certainly better than what they are. But I didn't hear a lot of, realistic, hey, this should be a playoff team. This should be a team contending. Yeah, it's maybe contending for the North title, something along those lines. But in the way of like national recognition, there it didn't feel like that was what people were looking at. Maybe I just didn't surround myself with enough Husky fans. But
yeah, well, I think I don't want to say unrealistic, because there've been good Husky teams over the years, obviously. But yeah, I think people just expect greatness, and there was a lot of talk like in the 90s when they had that national championship team, co-national champs, and all that.
Steve Ettman.
People thought, that they just automatically, were perennially going to be, have a seat at the table of, top five or top two programs in the country. So, sometimes unrealistic. But I'll tell you, you're facing a road trip here to Arizona, who's 0-4. So, I mean, if that will indicate if they're truly, really bad. Because, their two wins, 52-3 over Arkansas State, and then they won in overtime against Cal, which I watched that game, and had a physical goal line stand. So, that was good. But you're going to Arizona now. So, I mean, if you lose that game, it's pretty bad. And then you look at the stretch after that at Stanford, whatever you think about Stanford, they did beat Oregon. at number 10 is the next game at home, luckily. And then you got Arizona State, who's also, at least they were at one point, ranked 20th, 17th, something like that. Then you go, to Colorado, and you get the Apple Cup. So, yeah, it's time for them to, you know, go on a run. And if they're able to pick off, shoot, I'd say if they won even three of these next six games, that would be a plus.
Now, a lot of the criticism centers around their offensive coordinator. It's about our defensive coordinator with the Seahawks. It's about the offensive coordinator under Jimmy Lake's tutelage there under his watchful eye. And he was asked if he feels like he's got the right staff in place.
A lot this season about needing to put guys in better position to be successful. Do you think you have the right staff in place to make that happen?
Yes.
That was an emphatic yes. Yeah. Now, how does that sound at the end of the season, if he all of a sudden says, hey, I'd like to introduce our new offensive coordinator, Josh McGeggy, wave goodbye to their guy. It just, and I've heard, alums, whether it's Brock Heward or anybody else going, it's not working. What the plan is not, I don't know what they're looking at versus what they thought they were going to have, but it's not connecting. And if you watch them, they're not wrong. I mean, this is not a great offense. This is not a consistent offense. It's, and it's not every problem exists on the offensive side of the ball, but that's much like the Seahawks with the defense, where they've got problems all over, but the defense is really the biggest of problems. The same is true for the Huskies in reverse, where it's, yeah, you got problems elsewhere, but it's really about your offense.
Yeah. I would say this for fans. I mean, we just talked about this the other day. Okay, why would you bring Cam Newton in? Who, you've got a guy who, let's say Cam Newton has a little bit more talent than Geno Smith. I don't know if that's for sure or not based on the offense they want to run, but why would you bring a guy in who would not know the offense and has not been here and not, I mean, and that's the same thing. And I think a lot of people think about coordinators like, oh, they got to fire the coordinator, just fire him. You don't see it happen very often during the season because most coaches know, I mean, you're going to start over, or is he going to take what you've already put in and like tweak it in a certain way? Does he get something that you don't get? And, and for Pete Carroll, like for instance, and I'm sure Jimmy Lake's thinking the same thing. If Pete's like, let's say the linebacker coach, John Glenn, is all of a sudden like, well, why don't we do this? And why don't we do that? And it's starting to make sense. And he, knows that, okay, maybe, but it's pretty rare that you would do that. And so for Jimmy Lake, I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same thing as bringing Cam Newton in to quarterback your team for instead of Geno Smith. You got to get up to speed. You have to. I mean, that's why it's not done during the middle of the season mostly.
Yeah, and Lefko asks an interesting question here. They're at winless Arizona on Friday. Does it have to be a blowout win for you, Dub? I'd say at this point, no.
No. Yeah.
You just get a win, however you get it.
Absolutely.
In the end, it still counts as one. You'd feel great if they went out there and just dominated, just blew the doors off them. That's true in any sport of any team, whether they're struggling or not. But in this instance, I think you just need to taste victory. And if it comes in a by a field goal, 2, 3, 4 points, whatever it is, I don't think style points matter in this. Yeah. I really don't. Yeah, maybe if they get pushed to the edge by a winless team, people are going to go, well, that doesn't count for much. Well, you're still below 500. You're looking to stack W's right now. So right. I don't think style points are a big deal.
Yeah. Well, and also you look at the teams that Arizona lost to. I mean, they lost to San Diego State, who I think is still undefeated. They played BYU. They lost to Northern Arizona. So that's kind of like the Husky loss, but they lost at Oregon. So I mean, this isn't like this, they're 0-for. They're 0-for-6. But, they've had played some pretty tough teams. So, yeah, you just want to go down there and get a win. Doesn't matter if it's 1 point. Doesn't matter if it's in triple overtime. Get the W.
What are your thoughts quickly on the Cougs? Do you think they rally? Do you think there's a galvanizing effect to this, which we have often seen when in other sports, other situations, a manager, a head coach gets fired? It can be a galvanizing moment if, if he was popular with the team, they weren't producing, but hey, we like this guy. We're going to rally around the guy they put in his place.
Wasn't there also three assistants that went too?
I think four.
Was it four?
Yeah.
Yeah, so five coaches. That's going to be tough, man. I don't know. I mean, you can rally, certainly, and I know guys, you put their back up against the wall, and, maybe the new coaches are just like, let's just do it incredibly simple and just run the same plays and do the same stuff and just be really good at it and you get the kids fired up. But it seems like a lot that you lost there. That I think that one it could go. I think it could go pretty poorly.
Yeah,
that's my prediction. I hope I'm wrong because
they're going up against a 5-2 BYU team.
Yeah,
but they're at home, I believe. Right? They're Washington State's playing at home, I think. Yeah, they are. So they'll play host to BYU, which, you know, is a huge curiosity. I'm very interested to see that game. Just certainly rooting for them to win, but just how do the kids? You're talking about kids now. These aren't guys out there who are getting paid millions and, hey, I'm getting the same paycheck regardless of who the coach is, whether I love them or hate them. You know, kids, it's a little different. You've got somebody who recruited you. You got somebody who went into your living room and spoke to you and sold you on the virtues of the school, and you're my guy.
Yeah.
That's a different connection. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond.
Well, and they always tell kids, don't, you know, choose based on the coach, you know, because coaches get fired all the time. So, you know, I don't think I chose Stanford that way. I mean,
who was the coach?
It was Paul Wiggin. He was like the nicest guy in the world. I actually got a picture with him. He's buddies with Pete. Him and Pete Carroll were roommates when they coached together, I think, with Minnesota a long, long time ago. But yeah, and then we got Jack Elway in there, which was fantastic. But anyway, you look at BYU for Washington State, and then after that, they go to ASU, also really good team, and then to Oregon. So, and then you got the Apple Cup in there as well.
That's a heck of a stretch. All right. Yeah. There you go. A little Washington Wednesday college football talk for you. Coming up, the Seahawks might have won the 2006 NFC Championship thanks to one play from Matt Hasselbeck. We'll hear about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, Matt Hasselbeck is going to be inducted into the Seahawks Ring of Honor on Monday. And today when he was on with Mike Salk, they were asking him about some of his best wins, best career memories. And he actually had what I believe is maybe a never heard before story or a little known story about the 2006 NFC Championship game against the Panthers.
So the day before that game, I'm watching the TV copy of all their games. And this was a rare thing for me to do back then. But I did it, and I saw that they would stem from this Bear defense into a defense that was not the Bear defense. And I was like, oh, man. And I heard the middle linebacker go, move! And then they would sort of bluff it. So I come out, first play of the game, and shoot, they're in that Bear defense. And I'm like, this play is going to be a disaster, first play of the game. So instead of audibling out of it, I yell, just like that, I heard that middle linebacker on the TV copy. I go, move! And they all shift out of the Bear defense. It was their call I used. And they shifted out of the defense, and I was like, we got these guys.
So you audibled the defense.
I audibled the defense.
That is hilarious. It's funny,
Anybody ever do that to you?
No, but like the second he said he was watching the TV copy and he heard the move thing, I was like, I bet you he's going to. Sure enough. Oh, man. No, I don't remember ever. Yeah, I think you used to get in trouble for trying to simulate the snap. I'm pretty sure that's illegal. Like on defense, you can't go.
But can the offense do something to the defense? Is it a two-way street there? I've never heard of an offense doing it to the defense.
So yeah, me neither. So.
I've certainly heard that about defenders who know certain cadences or calls or whatever and trying to get the offense to jump, but I've never heard it the other way around.
That's awesome, man. Well, and also because, you know, you're a D lineman, you're down your stance, you can't tell who yelled that, maybe. You're not going to all of a sudden, your instinct is just to go, oh, okay, I didn't know we were doing that.
Yeah, to have been just, wait, that works. That worked? Oh, goodness.
I'm trying to remember the score of that game. Didn't they just blow out the Panthers?
They blew them out. Yeah, I just looked up. I think it was like 34-13 or 17. Yeah. It was a blowout.
That's 34 because Hasselbeck knew all of the calls out there.
He was cheating.
Putting him in the wrong position.
That's awesome. What a great awareness play by him. He was such a smart quarterback.
He said he rarely looked at TV copy.
Yeah, which is interesting because he's right. You don't. You watch the game film. There's no sound on it. Well, he picks something up watching the TV copy.
Sweeping the dial.
To more current NFL things, though, 49ers safety Jimmy Ward, he was at his weekly media availability, and he asked a pretty good question. How do the Rams pay all these star players?
Yeah, couldn't keep everyone. So maybe, I don't know, he probably could have made it work somehow. I don't, the Rams keep doing it. I don't know how. Where are they? You know where they're getting all this money from? But I don't know. But it, like I said, it's the business side of it.
It's those capologists, man. It's our guy at with the Seahawks. I always forget his name.
Matt Thomas.
Yeah, it's, his name's too common. Slips by me.
I know.
Matt Thomas. Nice. Super
he doesn't
nice
want
guy.
To be remembered.
I love that guy though. He really was
a
savior for us out there in the heat of the summer. But it's those guys, right? I mean, they're magicians and they are so necessary. And we've talked about some teams have more than one guy. In their entire existence is based upon manipulating the salary cap and making it work. And how do we move this money here? And how do we convert this from this to a bonus and this to salary and push it to this year? I mean, it's just so convoluted, and it's the shell game, yeah. You know, that you see, that you see on the streets where it's under this cap. No, let me switch this around. It's over here.
Yeah.
That's what they do. It feels like trickery. It's sorcery.
It is.
Financial sorcery is what it is, Dave.
And you got to be careful with that, too. Like, remember the whole Enron scandal? Like, they just kept pushing it further and further and further until all of a sudden it was like, oh, my gosh, this is a big violation. But everybody was sort of gradually creeping towards that. I'm not saying that.
But they're not doing anything untoward, right? I mean, it just feels like some people are just very adept at, hey, we can change this from guaranteed salary into a bonus, or this is now an incentive, or whatever they do. They just seem to find these loopholes. Maybe they're taking advantage of loopholes that exist, and they'll get changed in, a CBA down the road. But, those guys are worth their weight in gold.
They totally are. And that's for these, corporations and stuff that have tax guys that are just super sharp. I mean, you should spend, a lot of money. That's not an area where you should bargain shop. And same thing in the NFL. You shouldn't bargain shop for your capologist. It should be somebody who's really smart and really good and just understands all of the rules. Like I always say, it's just like the facilities. It's the NFL. It has that label and everything, but they're not the same. You know, every team doesn't spend the same amount of money on their players, and every team doesn't have, a plush, whatever, it's a weight room or, locker room, everything. They're all different. It's the same thing, I think, with these capologists. They do a good job, so whoever's doing it down there. I wonder if Marvin Demoff's son is a part of it, maybe. I'm not sure where he is. He used to be a president down there. Kevin Demoff, really smart guy. My agent was the smartest NFL guy I knew. Like, I feel like if you taught him the 3-4 defense, and he could probably pick it up in like 3 days.
Really?
Yeah, he just everything. He just understood everything about the league.
Just great comprehension skills.
Yep.
A little quick context on that, too. He was asked about DeForest Buckner because the Niners are playing the Colts this weekend.
Mm. Oh, gotcha.
So that's why he went on the tangent of, why can't we keep our guys like the Rams?
Yeah.
Sweeping the dial.
Now, we all know about this one. Mike Tomlin was very angry at the end of the game because of the review that stopped play when the Seahawks were scrambling to spike the ball. So reporters asked him that at his weekly press conference, and he didn't get into too much detail, but he said, yeah, he did not like this decision.
I hated it. I cannot believe that game was stopped to confirm catch, no catch in that moment. That's all I'm going to say.
What explanation did they give to you?
That's all I'm going to say.
totally agree with him. Totally agree. I mean, there was never a point where that did not look like. I mean, he caught the ball, turned, faced the guy, made a move, and then, that ball seemed like it was laying on the ground for forever.
Yeah, before Freddie Swain picks it up. But,
I mean, there was no reason at all to stop the clock. I still think it looked like the way it played out that they were still going to have a second.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He spiked it in time.
Yeah.
That was never in question.
Yeah.
So the end result is the same.
It's pretty much the same, but still, yeah, I get that his frustration there. Boy, I've paid attention to Tomlin. I watch when they're on Sunday night, Monday night football. I don't remember ever seeing him lose his cool like that.
No, he seems pretty even keeled. I like that guy. I think
that's
he's a
dude
great
you don't
coach.
Want to make angry.
No. They said, what is he, 49 years old? They said he's been with the team, their head coach for like, is it
04, 05? Like 16, 17, 18 years?
I think it's
like
18. Wow. Might be his 18th season. It's amazing. So he was in his early 30s when he.
Well, and as we've found out, he put up with a lot of junk from a lot of knuckleheads, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon. Yeah.
Yeesh. By the way, when I was asking you about, hey, is it legal? We know it's illegal for the defense to try to, you know, verbalize, do something to trigger the offense and get them to jump off sides. But I was asking you if it was legal for the offense to do that because I'd never heard that. And 206 says, Bob, since it's the NFL, the O can probably do just about anything the D is not allowed to do.
Yeah. That's right. Screw the defense. That's the direction that the NFL's going.
That's pretty much it. All right. Good stuff there. Coming up, we're going to go inside the now famous double punt. Yes, we do ask him about that. Our player spotlight features punter Michael Dixon, and is coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.